Pushkin. Hi, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Arlo Thomas. And we're going on a series of double dates to find out
what makes a marriage last. We flew out to Santa Monica to visit Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen. Their house is carved into the side of a hill.
It's a craftsman-style bungalow built in 1922, and it has what is called a living roof, which is covered with greenery to fight off climate change. Ted and Mary decorated it themselves. It's very relaxed and homey.
Mostly, it was their warm connection to each other that grabbed our attention from the start.
First off, this is fun.
Yeah, we've been so excited. We're really honored that you asked us.
Yeah.
Well, you came to mind immediately, you know, really. People are always asking us, how are you married so long? And what? I like him, he likes me.
Yeah.
He's cute, I like the way he smells. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So you do smell good.
Ted likes to play the rascal, but once we settled at their farm-style kitchen table and began to talk, he was so honest and vulnerable.
Married. Well, the four of us here, I'm the only one who's only married once.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I'm the third time being married.
Well, maybe that's an interesting way to start.
So great.
No, because either you're a wild optimist or you're in total denial. I mean,
I got married in college at Carnegie halfway through, and I think it's fair to say the real communication would have been, I'm afraid to go to New York by myself. Are you? Oh, well, let's go share an apartment and be buddies. That would have been kind of the emotional truth. But somehow we ended up getting married. And
you were young. You were 20.
And we were young, 22. And married for 5 years. Good friends, but certainly not, you know, a marriage. And then got divorced and married again and had children, but still a huge level of unconsciousness on my part. And that lasted 15 years. I mean, my life was incredibly messy, but underneath there was a lot of work going on where I was trying to stop being a liar and wake up.
And what were you lying about?
Everything. Pretty much. I was not hugely faithful. I'll leave it at that. So I did all this work on myself. But by the time we met, I was convinced I was incapable of having, you know, a relationship that I wouldn't mess up.
This was back in 1994, when both of them were cast in a film called Pontiac Moon.
And just like when I first met you, Ted was drawn to Mary immediately.
And what was it about her?
When you're cast in a part together, you have an excuse to look at somebody in the eye, whereas otherwise I'm kind of shy. We're about to work together, so you're supposed to know each other. So you share, and I was like I said, a hot mess, and so I shared my life with her on that first night, and it was very clear nothing was possibly going to happen because how nutty I was, and Mary wasn't looking to be in a relationship. So it really started off friends until halfway through the production. We took a canoe ride. Wow. Jump in here. I don't want to do a monologue.
You're doing great.
Okay. All right. So we were playing these kind of 1960s. It was a very strange film. But we're not going to have a relationship, Mary and I, because that's clear. But we should do something fun and kind of old-fashioned romantic because that's kind of what the film is like. By then, I knew that when I showed up at lunch and somebody else was sitting next to Mary, part of me was like, a little grumpy that I hadn't got there in time to sit next to her. But then we took the canoe ride, and it was this big tidal river called the Mendocino River.
Big river.
Big river. And we got into a canoe that had an outrigger. It was just a beautiful canoe. And there was a group of three or four other people going up. And we outdistanced them quickly. And we just kept going around the next bend. It was always Mary in the front, me in the back. Effortlessly paddling, which is, you learn a lot, I think, in a canoe. and there was very little conversation except when it was right. Mm-hmm. Sea otters, blue herons.
Sounds like something you liked it.
Yeah, it was just magically beautiful and totally in sync and peaceful and at ease. And I think on the way down, we stopped to have a little bite on the corner of the, you know, side of the river. But
you kept wanting to turn around.
Oh, that was kind of a, for our wedding, part of our vows was a poem about that canoe ride. It was really kind of like a charter for our marriage, finding the truth in each other's eyes. But Mary has in our entire life been the person that goes, oh, let's go around the next bend. Come on, let's do this. And I'm usually the one going, oh, I don't, you know, I think we should, we're fine. We should. And she's always the one that gets me to go around the next kind of curve in life. And
well, that sounds idyllic.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is. Hey, we're madly in love. I am feel so blessed on every level, from as deeply spiritual as you can get to the more shallow and whatever. We really do celebrate how lucky we are a lot.
Were you a little scared?
I got scared. I got
we
scared.
Had one, you had, you did. You yeah. had one moment where
I got really scared because we lived very differently. I lived in an old farmhouse in Ojai and had a very small life, except I would go off and occasionally do a movie. But I couldn't even do that very often because I was a single parent and I didn't want to leave my kids, you know? And I've always been a little shy of being out there, being talked about. I don't need that. I love being an actor, but I didn't do it because I need to be the person in front of the flash bulbs. I like being in front of the camera, but I don't like my life being out there. And his was all out there. And so,
but because I was being messy, because it scared me.
It scared me. And I was just scared because I'm so protective of my children as a mother. Like, I don't want to make a bad choice. And so it was scary, you know, but here's what I found. I found this weird thing that you can go, your brain can say, no, 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 I can't do this. No, no, no. This is, I need to walk away from this. And your brain can say whatever it says, but I found, and this is not an intentional pun, but my soul was in my feet. My feet, sometimes very hesitantly, sometimes more surely, walked toward him. And no matter what my head was doing, that's what I found myself doing. And so it was like, I can only assume that was the voice of my soul, because my brain, my brain was not that simple,
right.
You know, my brain was like.
Well, especially a guy who'd been married twice.
Yeah, yeah.
You would think, well, is he going to be able to do this?
Yeah. I had told myself, because I had just ended a relationship right before I met him, and it was really not a good relationship at all. And we were both very much not right for each other. And I had just told all of my friends, guess what? I'm not good at relationships. And I look like I would be, but in fact, I'm not. And I'm done. I have two beautiful children. I'm done. I'm not putting myself through this anymore. And then I met him.
I was smitten. Uh-huh. Because my life was so complicated, I didn't think to do something about that.
Right.
But I couldn't wait to be around her, literally every day.
I don't know if I felt that right away. It was such a crazy time for me. And everything for me got filtered through my two kids.
So how old were they at this time?
They were 10 and 12.
Yeah, that's young.
And then I just started noticing whenever we were all as a cast going out to dinner or doing something, when he wasn't there, it was like, oh, okay, a little disappointed.
Right.
So it snuck up on me and it just kept becoming more and more and more undeniable that I wanted to be around him. And also just the more I got to know him, the more I saw, in spite of everything that was going on, I saw what a fine human being this is, you know, and so different than I thought, because I had an image of him that even though it's stupid, I sort of bought into Sam Malone.
Yeah, right.
Even though I should know better, because I'm an actor.
Yeah, but it was a long time, that show.
And I was a big fan of the show. And I started to think, oh, he's probably super slick guy, you know? And then
your joke is very funny.
My joke is that I was wrong because slick guys don't say gosh-a-rooney after making love.
That's hilarious.
But I mean, Ted was raised with the Hopi Navajo people and ranchers' kids outside of Flagstaff, Arizona. Spent his mornings riding bareback on a horse, you know, across the desert with his friend Raymond, who was Navajo or Hopi. And that he had the most exotic American childhood. And once I started meeting his family and seeing like all the pieces that made up this person, it was like, wow, he's so not who I thought
what
he was.
Right.
Not at all. And I mean, for me, his tenderness toward my children and now our grandchildren would be a reason alone to love him. Yeah.
Did you make an accommodation that you could talk about to accommodate this?
My changes came before I met Mary. I mean, I had a mentor who walked me through a lot of my stuff that I was going through. And as soon as I had kind of woken up, the gift of my life was standing there. But
this habit you had of lying, let's say.
Right.
Did you notice yourself saying to yourself, I'm not going to do that here. I'm not going to.
I do remember one moment where early on, before we were engaged even, that I started to do a version of push-pull. And I looked and Mary, it didn't register on her face. She didn't play that game. She didn't even nibble at whatever this little thing I was, you know, doing. So it was like, oh, God, I guess I don't have to do that anymore. You know, if this person doesn't even know this stupid dance, I won't have to do that dance anymore.
Right. For me, I had a big accommodations to make. I was a single woman with no children, and I married a man who lived with four sons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was very flattered because he would say to people, Marla's the first person I've ever known that knows the difference between each of them and can talk to each of them differently. And I had good relationships with them all.
There is no book that tells you how to do it.
Right.
And the one thing I figured out right away, for me, that worked, I don't know if it works for everybody, is they have a mom, it's not me, what do they need from me? Like, what is safe and fair to give to do as far as being a step-parent? And then I thought, well, man, everybody needs a cheerleader.
There's no Mary Poppins.
No.
There's no Aunt Bee.
No, no.
You know, so forget that.
Yeah.
And you just have to hope and pray.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've made, oh, good Lord, we have bumps and ups and downs and, you know, I all the time. But 90% of the time, we want to have fun and be happy.
Right.
You know, we'll do drama if we have to a little bit.
Well, our motto is the only drama we like is that we're paid for.
Right. You know,
I look at Mary and go, we can be in the middle of an argument and I can trust, even with anger in the air, that if I look at my stuff, she will look at her stuff or vice versa, that she is trustworthy to see her part in any situation.
It feels a lot better to point over there and say, you're wrong and this is what you've done to me and I'm a victim. And it feels so much better than to go, okay.
Here's my half.
Here's my half. I'm going to own up to it. I mean, where's the fun in that? But the fact that you do it is magic.
We'll have more after a quick break. We're back to our conversation with Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen. They've been together nearly 30 years. So Marlo wanted to know what happens when they hit a rough spot.
You do have to have something in the bank to get you through those moments. And I do have trust that on the other end of this, if I walk away in the middle of a fight and go, there's a voice going, do you really think that your wife is not crazy about you and love you? And I have to go, no, of course she does. You know, so there's something good about having a history of getting through, a history of love, a history of knowing she loves you. But yeah, usually it's about finally telling the truth that I don't want to tell. Whether it's I'm angry irrationally at you. And if I tell you I'm angry at this, then how can we be, you know, I grew up with a mother who was unbelievable about the giving, the caring, the loving, the nurturing. You're in pain, she could be with people dying. People came to her. But anything negative, a negative thought, a selfish, petty, angry thought was intolerable. She would almost get sick she'd have a cold. The flu, as opposed to dealing with her anger, you know, anything that was less.
So dealing with anger for you was hard?
Huge. Still is, you know, or anything where, I mean, we just had
for both of us, for different, very different reasons.
Yeah.
We both had come from families where it was fully loaded that anger was scary. You know, both of us. And
and
that was one of the things before I met him, I recognized in myself. I realized it. I first went to therapy. And the first thing I learned on day one was how I had not been able to express anger, that there was no room for it, no place for it, that it was not appropriate in my life. And
for real.
Yeah, I came from, I didn't mean to interrupt
go.
You.
No, I mean, go.
My dad was a freight train conductor, and I grew up in Arkansas, and that would have been a nice little middle class family, except that my dad, when I was 8 years old, was diagnosed with heart disease, and in those days, they dealt with it in very weird ways. He was basically told, you can't work, you can't hunt, you can't fish, you can't drive, you can't make love to your wife.
Oh my
you
God.
Can't. They took everything.
You can eat your bacon.
You can eat, no problem with bacon.
Oh my gosh.
You know, like, and my dad was one of these people that would do exactly what his doctor told him. So, you know, they gave him not much reason to live, but that was supposed to keep him alive.
Yeah.
And so when the doctor told us, I was there with my mother, and the doctor looked at us, and I remember him looking at me and saying, now you be a good girl now. You know, your daddy needs you to be a good girl and keep everything quiet, and you know. And basically the 8-year-old went, I get it. I can't make noise. I can't do anything wrong. I can't make a mistake or my dad's going to die.
Oh.
Got it.
Oh, my God.
And it was backed up with 8 heart attacks.
And then
my dad
proceeded to have heart attack after heart attack. And during that time, he couldn't work. So we became, you know, we struggled.
Yeah.
And so... So my mother became...
That pressure must be awful. I mean...
It was.
You're always looking at your dad to see if he's breathing.
100% of the time. That was my childhood. And then he would have a heart attack. Like one was when I got a B, and one, you know, that I knew what I had done to cause each one. So the good news about that story is that my world that was safe was books. Just by reading,
but I could. So many emotions were suppressed.
Yeah, but not in books.
Oh,
in
wow,
books,
no.
It was
amazing.
Like, and my favorite as a child, like my hero, was Pippi Longstocking, who was like wild and redheaded and wore shoes too big for herself so she could wiggle her toes. And, you know, I loved all that because it was the opposite of what I was being.
So when you got a hold of your anger, when you went through all this therapy.
So on day one of therapy, which was when I was 24 years old, and this woman on day one goes, oh my God, well, no wonder you became an actress. Of course, that's your safe place. That's the, you know.
To let it out.
And so learning how to be a fully actualized human being that actually could experience things other than sweet Southern smiles, you know, that was a huge thing for me. And I think for a while, I got angry too quickly. It's like a...
You turned a switch on.
The switch was too... It was maladjusted, all of it, you know? And part of what I've had to learn to do is just be centered with it.
Well, I mean, do you have a real fight?
We have had some humdingers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've accused him before of fighting. I said, you're mean. You're mean like a junkyard dog. But the truth is, we both hate it.
So if you had to say, what's the foundation that makes a marriage last other than love?
I would say truth and laughter.
Yeah.
Honestly, those two things for us.
And the hard work part is tell the truth.
Yeah,
because I mean, that's uncomfortable.
At times, yeah.
What? When is it uncomfortable to tell the truth?
When it's not going to feel good to the other person, or when it's going to make you look bad, uh-huh. or when you've done something that you know I'm going to have to tell Mary. Shoot. You know, because now I can't ride in on my white horse and be wonderful and noble. I'm an asshole, and I just proved it. Now I'm going to have to share this with Mary.
And why do you have to share it with Mary?
Because otherwise because we kind of have an agreement, unspoken or spoken agreement, to share, to not have secrets. So it's not that I need to share it to get blessing or permission or something. I need to share it so I don't have this little inside of me.
People are going to think these are really juicy secrets.
No,
you've got.
No. It's whatever it is.
No, I know.
Did you have secrets in the beginning?
No. Mm-mm. No.
I think that's what was unique about the relationship for each of us. I'd never not had secrets. I'd been full of secrets. But for us, I think we had both kind of had enough of secrets.
Oof.
You know, we had both lived that way. And it had caused us to feel alone in life, you know? He knows my warts. He knows exactly how smart or not smart or kind or not kind or how impatient a person I am. He knows all that.
Sometimes it's not that there's a secret between you, that there's a sadness that you haven't looked at inside of yourself that you know, hey, I'm getting older. I'm feeling sad about getting older,
yeah.
And I'm embarrassed to tell you that I'm better.
Exactly.
Better.
No, that's great. Yeah.
All of those things.
But I think also, and no two people would be more perfect to say this to than you two, as famous people, the world either criticizes or romanticizes you. It's rare.
It's rare
that they would just...
Right.
Like your realness, and here you are, a very imperfect person. That's, if I had to say, the thing we're most protective of in life, it's that we keep it real.
So that...
And I, you know, you also recognize in people, for me, it's like my mother had a lot of things and was complicated, but there were so many wonderful things about her that I see in Mary, you know. There's a deep kindness and caring, you know, about people. I don't think I could be with somebody who didn't feel that way. We had a divine intervention, yeah. And here we are.
But it's also, but these are little pegs along the way that you've said,
yeah.
That it's it feels like magic, but it isn't. Because there are, yeah. These things that you count on each other for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I completely count on Phil, and I'm not what one would call a needy little person, but I need something from him, many things, but one of the things that I need is that when I get blue about all of these things, you know, mm-hmm. out of work, I'm getting older, whatever it is that I choose to be blue about that day, only Phil can bring me back. And I'm from Hollywood, so I know a bullshitter when I see one. You know, mm-hmm. what he says to me, you know, it just is immediately, I respond,
yeah,
to it,
yeah.
You know, and I come back. He waters my plant, mm-hmm. you know, and I come,
yeah.
back.
That's, yeah. really
you
nice,
know?
Yeah.
So, and I count on it.
Gratitude is huge for me, you know.
It is.
Yeah, it's okay to be wanting more and different and all of that. But be grateful and celebrate, you know.
The first thing I wrote in an autobiography, I wrote in 1978. The first line is, if I could start over as a parent, and I wish I could, when my children pleased me, I would tell them.
It's tough because how old were you? What age are you talking about for yourself when you all of a sudden had four sons by yourself?
27.
Wow. Smack dab, yeah, into, can I carve out a place in the world? Can I do this? So you're so forward-looking. Yeah. It's hard.
I was
hard.
Also doing a show every day.
But parenting is a lousy job for a perfectionist or to even have satisfaction because it's just...
Everybody's doing the best,
right,
they can,
right,
you know. Can I add one thing?
No,
in the
picking, you can't.
No, be quiet, Ted. My form of seduction early in life was to find the person's gaping hole in their personality or their being and then fill it and become indispensable to them. You know, so I was...
I know a lot of guys like you.
I was like around a lot of kind of broken wing, wounded kind of people. And don't do that. You know, find somebody who's playing at the same level you are.
That's actually... Find somebody that likes being who they are.
Yes, that's better.
You know, that's great. But that's also very interesting. What you're saying is... Great, that find somebody who likes who they are.
Yes.
They might not think they're perfect.
Right, right.
They might need help, right, now and then, but they basically, they're not running from who they are. Life is not a series of pointing fingers and, yes, blaming.
And also, you're not going to be the one to save them.
No, you're not. You're not going to change them.
That's what's great about the broken wing people.
You're not going to change somebody. Yeah.
You will never fix the broken wing.
I met somebody who was so happy being herself. She needed me to show up and be me and be real, but she didn't need me to fix her. And I'd done a lot of fixing, which leads to anger, you know.
Inequality.
Yeah, inequality, patronizing. It's horrible when you think you're the person fixing somebody else. It sucks. And it's terrible to them. It's terrible to you. And, you know, find someone you don't have to fix.
Great.
When we're in love and in tune and communicative and laughing in life, when we're that how we are most of the time, it is truly divine. It is heaven on earth.
That's Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen. They sure were fun and so in love with each other.
It was pretty idyllic. I would be jealous, but I have you.
You most certainly do. Until next time, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas.
Okay.
I win.
You win.
Now, right, what you should do is leave one of the mics on when you leave these interviews.
We have a big bust up.
The stupidest thing.
Did you believe those two pretending that they like each other?
Okay. Double Date is a production of Pushkin Industries.
The show was created by us and produced by Sarah Lilly. Michael Bahari is associate producer. Musical adaptations of It Had to Be You by Stellwagen Symphonette.
Marlo and I are executive producers, along with Mia Lobel and Lital Molad from Pushkin.
Special thanks to Jacob Weisberg, Malcolm Gladwell, Heather Fain, John Schnars, Carly Migliori, Eric Sandler, Emily Rostek, Jason Gambrell, Paul Williams, and Bruce Kluger.
If you like our show, please remember to share, rate, and review. Thanks for listening.